one of the principles that I always try and remind myself of when I'm communicating is put the audience ahead of yourself. We should think about who's my audience and what do they need and how can they understand what I'm sharing with them. And we should put that ahead of our own need to sort of our smartness or how much we know. And I think that's true whether you're speaking to a client who has asked you to do some pricing work or some other work, whether you're presenting to a board, whether you're speaking to the media and you're speaking to a general population audience. I think we should always be willing to consider the person who's listening rather than being a little bit self-indulgent and putting that need to sort of how smart we are ahead of that.
I am an actuary.
I am an actuary.
I am an actuary.
Welcome to the We Are Actuaries podcast, where you'll meet leaders who use their actuarial powers to solve a range of problems and make a real difference. I am your host, Julia Lessing, and I'm a qualified actuary based in Australia. I help actuaries develop communication and leadership skills to build great actuarial careers. So settle in, learn from the best, and be inspired.
Hi, everyone. Today we're talking about actuaries as communicators. Now, as actuaries, we're not known for our communication skills. In fact, there's many jokes based on the stereotypical communication skills deficit amongst us actuaries. But for us as actuaries to really be able to use our superpowers to make a difference in the world, we need to be able to communicate. So how can we build our communication skills? Joining us today is an actuary who's been on live TV and radio, Emma Witz. Emma, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Emma, you're an actuary and hopefully just weeks away from qualifying. You're also a consultant at Finity working in general insurance pricing, natural perils and climate risks, some really interesting spaces for actuaries. And I remember after the Auckland floods and Cyclone Gabrielle, you appeared on live TV and radio discussing how those disasters would impact insurance affordability and availability. And you've also written on data journalism pieces on everything from housing to healthcare and truancy. And your data visualizations have been presented to the New Zealand Housing Minister on live TV and viewed hundreds of thousands of times online. I mean, wow, I can't think of another actuary better placed to discuss communication skills than you, Emma.
Wow, thank you.
But first, let me ask you this. Emma, how do you use your actuarial superpowers to make a difference in the world?
I would say my actuarial superpowers are communicating complicated topics to all kinds of people in ways that are interesting, easy to understand, but also accurate. And I think being an actuary really helps me do that.
Excellent. It's such a powerful skill, isn't it, to be able to communicate those complex concepts clearly and accurately, because I think our work is so complex and we're trained to deal with that complexity, but our audience doesn't always want to hear all the detail about how complex it is. They just want that so what factor. So Emma, how do you apply actuarial thinking to your career?
Yeah, so I actually started out my actuarial career in quite an unconventional way. But I think when I look back, there's still sort of this thread of actuarial thinking throughout that, even though before I started studying to become an actuary or even before I, you know, kind of knew what an actuary was or knew how to pronounce the word. So I began by studying psychology, actually, with the intention of becoming a clinical psychologist. And I found that I actually really enjoyed the statistics papers that sort of came with that, which is, you know, it's a bit of a sign that you're not quite like the other psychology students.
That's true. Most psychologists I know will tell me that when they find out that I'm an actuary, they think, oh, you would have been good at the stats part. They said the stats part was the worst part of my psychology degree. So whereas yeah. You were the opposite. You did the psychology degree but actually found the stats. You enjoyed the stats.
Yeah, and I actually ended up tutoring a lot of psychology students for that reason in statistics because they had to do it and really didn't like it. Yeah, and so then sort of a few years into my degree, a couple of things happened that really pivotal in kind of where I am now. So the first is that I realized I was in the wrong degree effectively. So I sort of noticed that I really wanted to work in a more quantitative space, perhaps sort of a data science role or something to do with statistics. So I noticed that I probably should have studied something like statistics and maths or statistics and computer science rather than statistics and psychology. And then the other thing that happened is I got really sick. So I was sort of, you know, 2 years into my degree and I developed a chronic illness. And so what I noticed at that point in time is that I wasn't able to backtrack and start again. I didn't really have the energy or the time to do that. And so I started thinking about, you know, how do I break into this more quantitative field that I'm interested in a slightly unconventional way? And the way that I did that was really focusing on the skills that I saw kind of lacking amongst people who were quantitatively inclined. And that was really things around communication. So speaking publicly, writing, communicating visually, so through sort of visualizations. And I really focused on that as sort of a differentiating point, because I saw that as low-hanging fruit effectively that would allow me to have a skill set that was interesting to employers without, you know, having to put huge amounts of time or energy into it. Now, that doesn't sound very actuarial, you know, I decided to focus on public speaking and all of the rest of it. But I think that, you know, sort of looking at the opportunity set that was in front of me and kind of deciding, you know, what's the risk and return looking like and how can I maximize what I can do? I think there is a thread of actuarial thinking there, and also kind of realizing that there's this element of concentration risk when you sort of put all of your skill set into one domain. And if you diversify, there's actually a lot of benefits to that. So that was all before I, you know, became an actuary, but I think there was some of that thinking there already.
So you started out wanting to be a clinical psychologist. You found that you enjoyed the statistics subject so much that you wanted to do more of that quantitative analysis. And then becoming unwell and having that realization that you wanted to work in a more quantitative field led you to pivoting towards actuarial studies. And while you talk, it's interesting while you're talking about the low-hanging fruit of communication skills to help you kind of make that transition. I think for many actuaries, those communication skills are not easy skills. It wouldn't be the low-hanging fruit for everyone, but it's a great example of how you've been able to take your strengths and use those strengths to be able to help take your career in a direction that you wanted it to go. What a great story. So, okay, so how did you then decide, because you're about to get qualified as a fellow.
That's right, yeah, hopefully.
Once you made that shift towards actuarial studies, and as you said, you know, take those communication skills and focus on those other skills, because I absolutely agree, being able to build out those communication skills can really enhance your actuarial career, and it can separate you from other actuaries as well in terms of opening up more doors, opening up more opportunities to do really interesting things. And I know you're working in a very interesting space of climate change, but how can you tell us a bit about your path to qualification? So from when you made that decision to shift towards actuarial to now, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so I actually started off, I did an internship at Trade Me while I was still at university, which is sort of the New Zealand equivalent of Gumtree. So that was a data science internship. And then I sort of realized that data science is quite a slippery fish in the sense that it's quite poorly defined. You know, you could be getting a really highly technical role, or you could be getting something that's maybe more of a business insights sort of role where you don't have a lot of opportunity to really work in the technical deep end, so to speak. And then someone at the university suggested that I apply for this graduate role at Finity. You know, I was sort of like, you know, they're not going to be interested. Like, I have a degree in psychology, but I did it anyway. And I really did try and emphasize those communication skills and that point of difference in my application. And they, you know, they took a risk on me, to be honest with you. And I obviously know that I was signing up to do the exams. I was starting from the beginning, so I wasn't coming in with, I had one prerequisite, so I did everything from part ones onwards. At the same time, I sort of approached it as, you know, I'll do this as long as it's interesting. I never really committed to 12 exams at once, and yet I'm about to do my 12th exam. Where I've always been sort of committed to the next exam, but never thinking, you know, if this doesn't work out, then, you know, I'm stuck with it. That's not how I've ever approached it. So I've been studying for 6 years, like I said, 12 exams, and obviously that's been, it's been a lot, especially with working full time and still having that chronic illness. But at the same time, it's been really interesting. It's given me sort of that combination of technical rigor, but also the commercial application that I think suits me really well. I'm not meant for the academic life, but at the same time, I do want to work in a space that has really strong theoretical underpinnings and kind of pushes that boundary of knowledge. And I think that's what working in actuarial, especially in a consulting space, does for me.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've really landed in the right place for you.
By chance.
And yeah, like most actuaries I know who started their careers or live or used to live in New Zealand, you've become an actuary the hard way because you haven't done an undergraduate's degree in actuarial studies like those of us in Australia have been able to do and then get exemptions from part one and two. You've had to really do it the hard way, the long route.
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay, so those communication skills have been really pivotal in helping you to land in this place that where you're able to use your analytical skills and work in an area that's really interesting to you, despite having started off in psychology. So let's talk a bit about how you built those communication skills, because you've been on the radio and the TV. I mean, most actuaries would be terrified at the prospect of doing that. Can you tell us how you developed your communication skills to prepare for those activities?
Yeah, so it was a very gradual process. I started speaking at meetup events and then sort of small conferences and things like that. And there's really a snowball effect I've found that once you start putting yourself out there, you know, people, there are definitely organizers out there who struggle to find someone who's, you know, technical and willing to speak, especially sort of the younger demographic. They often, you know, want someone to represent that point of view. So once you start putting yourself out there, there is sort of a snowball effect where people come to you.
Right.
So yeah, I started speaking at sort of small events and then conferences, and eventually I was asked to go on a podcast for RNZ to speak about insurance and being an actuary and all of that. At the same time, I was also doing data visualization courses sort of on the side and sharing my work primarily on Twitter. And then I actually, this is quite a funny story, I took a sick day at one point. I went home sort of halfway through the day and I was like, oh, I'm not feeling well. Went home and I was on Twitter and I saw this map of housing affordability in the US. And because I don't quite know how to, you know, switch off, I was like, I could make this for New Zealand. So, you know, I'm sitting at home in bed kind of making this map and shared it on Twitter, and it went viral. And yeah, it was everywhere suddenly. And that was the map that was shared to the New Zealand housing minister. And following on from that, I was asked to write for a small news organization in New Zealand. And all of that was kind of building over time. And then at the beginning of 2023, Cyclone Gabrielle happened, and then the Auckland floods as well, which was huge for New Zealand and for the insurance industry in particular. New Zealand has always focused very heavily on earthquake, and all of the other natural perils have sort of been an afterthought to that. And these events kind of really changed that. And so I was asked to go on the radio, which I did, and then to go on TV. And I actually agreed to that before sort of getting sign off from my boss, which I wouldn't recommend. That's not how you do that.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a learning experience for me. But overall, it went really well. And yeah, it's been really great to see how that has kind of evolved over time.
Yeah. So it wasn't something that happened overnight. It was something that you built and proactively put yourself out there and did things in your own time to raise your profile, and that momentum built over time so that you were getting those invitations to speak, and that, it, as you said, it snowballed from there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious to hear, I mean, you and I both know this because we're communicators and actuaries, but benefits for actuaries in developing communication skills. I mean, I teach communication as part of the Actuaries Institute program, and I'm the chief examiner for communication modelling and professionalism. But sometimes selling the benefits of communication as actuaries can be a challenge. And I don't know if that's because it's not maybe our natural habitat for many actuaries, or it's something that's a little bit scary. But I wonder if you could just outline some of the benefits that you see for actuaries in developing their communication skills.
I think one of the main benefits that I see is flexibility. Communication is obviously it's a skill set that's never, you know, you're never going to regret having that as a skill set. Whether or not you work in a traditional actuarial space or you work in an unconventional part of the industry or outside of the industry altogether, being able to communicate well through writing, through presenting, through, you know, visualizations is something that will always open doors for you and make things possible. I think sometimes we have a very imbalanced skill set, or that's at least the risk that I see in sort of the actuarial pathway. We spend so much time focusing on the technical and getting that last little bit of improvement on that front. And it's like, if you improved your communication skills, it would take you less time. It would have more of an impact, and it would open a lot of doors for you.
Yeah, good bang for your buck if you invest in your communication skills.
100%.
So, and clearly that's paid off for you, Emma, in terms of how you've raised your profile and, you know, your role coming across to Australia and your role at Finity and your continued role as someone who is called upon to speak on behalf of actuaries. It's a very, very exciting path that you've taken, a very unusual one, but also one that's clearly had a lot of benefits for your career. And I think also benefits for the profession more broadly, because it's getting that brand actuary out there where everyone can see what actuaries are doing. So well done on that.
Thank you.
And best of luck for your upcoming final exam to become a fellow. So Emma, we've talked about your sort of unusual, unconventional path into actuarial studies via psychology and the slippery fish of data science that kind of helped you decide that you wanted to become an actuary, not necessarily a broader data scientist, even though data science is a big part of what you're doing now as an actuary. You've talked about that slow build and that snowball effect of how you built your communication skills through doing things in your own time and putting things on Twitter and writing and offering to speak and then getting known as someone who's able to do that and then building those skills and practicing those skills from there. And you've outlined some of the benefits for actuaries in building their communication skills as well. So I want to finish our interview with one question, Emma, and it's this. What's one tip you'd have for actuaries wanting to become better communicators?
I think one of the principles that I always try and remind myself of when I'm communicating is to put the audience ahead of yourself. So I think we should think about who's my audience and what do they need and how can they understand what I'm sharing with them. And we should put that ahead of our own need to sort of prove our smartness or, you know, how much we know. And I think that's true whether you're speaking to a client who has asked you to do some pricing work or some other work, whether you're presenting to a board, whether you're speaking to the media and you're sort of speaking to a general population audience. I think we should always be willing to consider the person who's listening rather than sort of being a little bit self-indulgent and putting that need to sort of how smart we are ahead of that. And I think when you spend years and years of time developing technical skills, you do feel like you need to prove that. You do feel like, you know, let me show what I can do. So I understand that and I feel that all the time. But at the same time, the other person doesn't really care. What they care about is, you know, why does this matter to me? And how can you tell me this in a way that's understandable? And I think where this comes out most clearly for me is when I've been putting together those data visualizations and that writing for the spinoff. So that news organization, which is a general audience. And, you know, when you put a lot of work into something, you kind of want to show, you know, I can add another layer of complexity to this diagram. I can show more. I can, you know, and the reality is like someone sitting on the bus to work on their phone with a small screen, they don't want you to do that. They want to be able to read your article and take something away from it that's interesting and understandable and meaningful. And if we take that attitude and sort of apply it to any communication situation that we're in, then we're actually much more effective in our roles.
Great advice. Thinking about the audience when it's so tempting to just think about ourselves and what we're going to say, but actually putting ourselves in their shoes and thinking, what would they like to take away from this communication and how can we make it easy for them to do that? So great advice, Emma. Thank you so much for sharing your story, a little bit of your story today, and some tips for actuaries in building their communication skills.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So there you have it, real life stories and practical tips from a leader using their actuarial superpowers to make a difference in the world. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to get in touch, subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your network. You'll find details from today's interview in the show notes below and on our website, www.guardianactuarial.com.au. Until next time.